the fact that disability is not necessarily a bad thing, and even the word disability is not a bad word, as long as we don't think of it in terms of hierarchy, in terms of non-disabled people being better.
From Crossroads Media, this is See Hear Love with Melinda Estabrooks, Season 10, Episode Number 6.
Welcome to See Hear Love, and I'm your host, Melinda Estabrooks, and we have a show for you today. This show is all about listening, leaning in, and learning from women with disabilities, and I am thrilled to have Jasmine Duckworth and Chantel Hunink. Woo, I got it, on the show today with me. I'm so excited that you're here.
Thanks for having us.
Yes.
I got excited when you said listening, but I can't really lean, so okay. That might be a little bit problematic. Okay.
This is going to be great, but I need to let our viewers and listeners know about the two of you. So Jasmine has been serving with Caris Disability Services, formerly Christian Horizons, since 2004 and has been disabled herself since 2015. And as part of her role as Community Development Manager, she often speaks with churches and community groups about disability, accessibility, ableism, and belonging. Jasmine works closely with self-advocates as they work to improve Caris Disability Services, the developmental services sector, and the broader community. Jasmine is a mom, a wife, and an obsessive knitter. Favorite thing you've knitted so far?
Sweater. I have sweater? A cardigan that I love.
How long did it take you?
4 months.
Okay. I don't think I'd have the patience for that, but I love knitted sweaters. I love that you're a knitter. That's amazing. And this gorgeous woman here, Chantel Hunink, is a motivational speaker, author, and social justice advocate. She is also a regional counselor in Waterloo, Ontario, where you work with staff and council colleagues on issues that include, I love this, affordable housing, sustainable and accessible public transit, and the provision of upstream resources that promote safety for all.
That's me. And for many years before that, I worked with Caris Disability Services, and Jasmine and I worked closely together. So it's good to see you again, Jasmine.
Well, I know, because you guys are like great friends, and even getting prepared for this show, I know that you two were talking and
scheming,
commiserating about what you were going to share. So here's the thing. Before the show, I got a little emotional, because I apologized that I hadn't done a show on this, and it took me 10 seasons to do. And I think what you said, Jasmine, really touched me, that it's like I wasn't the woman that I was 9 years ago. And as I'm learning and growing, these are the things that I'm realizing that I need to learn about. And I appreciate that you just saying that, because I hopefully all of us as women are evolving and growing in our search for belonging and creating safe spaces for that. So thank you. And so this means a lot that the two of you are here to talk about these things. So I'm learning today. And so the first question I have are, there are four key things we need to know about people with disabilities. You've shared those with me, or you said these are the four. And I think this will help me and others who are listening and watching about this. So the first one you said is intersectionality. What does that mean? And why is that something I need to know with people with disabilities?
So I can speak to intersectionality if you like. Intersectionality generally refers to the categories of personhood that people belong to. And so for me, I belong to, I'm a woman, I have disabilities, so I belong to the disability community. I'm a Christian, I'm a Caucasian person. And so intersectionality refers to the different privileges we hold, or the different ways that we can be discriminated against. And the big thing about intersectionality is it's not one marginalized identity plus another marginalized identity equals two marginalized identities. It's kind of the marginalization changes shape, or the place that you hold in society becomes more and more different, kind of compounds on itself, depending on the different forms of marginalization that you might experience in our society.
Wow.
Yeah, we both recognize that we hold a lot of privilege as white women, as professionals, educated, articulate, average size. There's so many aspects of privilege we hold. And when I speak with other women or people with disabilities that come from communities of color or different types of disabilities, people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, they face ways of being marginalized that I don't. And so we may both belong to the disability community, but like you talked about, that compounding really gives us different experiences. So we just wanted to right up front acknowledge the privilege that we hold as we sit and talk to you here today, because we are just one piece of the disability community, and there are a multitude of perspectives
out
there.
And we may be some of the most privileged people with disabilities,
absolutely,
being that we are Caucasian and that we are highly educated people. So
I really appreciate that. I really appreciate that you've identified that and said, you know what, there's different, what you've said, like groups, and that you have said that you feel like, well, you are privileged in the way of that. See, again, I'm learning. So, like, you know, hopefully you'll have some grace for me as I'm kind of processing and listening in. Okay, so that makes sense with intersectionality. The second one that you said was one of the key things we need to know about people with disabilities is the language we use to talk about disability. This is something really interesting because for many areas in culture, we are too afraid to talk or engage because we're too afraid that we will offend.
So,
like, if we say the wrong thing, you know, and not even, and to the extreme of being canceled or to the extreme of me being, you know, taped on socials or for me to offend you and then you don't like me and something happens. So then, you know what happens? We don't say anything. We don't engage. We diminish. We go small and we go, okay, I don't want to offend so that I won't bother. Mm-hmm. And that's a problem too. So let's talk about this language. Help me understand what kind of language to use.
So I think what I want you and your listeners to hear today and the viewers at home is that language is continuously evolving and language will always be inadequate. We cannot use one word or a couple of terms to refer to a whole multifaceted person. When I talk about language evolving, 20 years ago, it was very, very important to refer to the person first. And so growing up, I wasn't a disabled person or a wheelchair person. I was a person who used a wheelchair. I was a person with a disability or someone who had a disability. There are many people in my generation that still prefer that because that's what they grew up with. However, kind of the disability pride movement is a little bit reclaiming the fact that disability is not necessarily a bad thing. And even the word disability is not a bad word, as long as we don't think of it in terms of hierarchy, in terms of non-disabled people being better. And so, Jasmine, I don't know if you want to talk about disabled bodies and such.
Sure. So I know I work with a lot of people at Caris that prefer person-first language. In the communities, people with developmental and intellectual disabilities, they still tend to prefer that because they're still fighting hard to be seen as full people first and to not be discounted because of their disabilities. And so I absolutely appreciate and respect that view. So whenever I'm talking about the people I work with, I do tend to use person-first language, person with disability. For myself, I'm very comfortable using identity-first language to say that I'm disabled or I'm a disabled person. The same way that I would be very comfortable to say I'm a woman or I'm Canadian, I don't have to say I'm a person who is female or I'm a person who lives in Canada.
Right, okay.
I'm very happy to take those aspects of my identity and integrate them into, like, this is part of who I am. I'm Canadian. I'm a woman. I'm disabled.
Okay.
It's not a source of shame. It's just a part of what makes me me. And I'm very comfortable with that. But you will hear both in the disability community, and there are very valid reasons for both. So just kind of follow the lead of whoever you're talking to. But main point is get to know the person. Don't let the language be a barrier to reaching
that
out.
That is so important. Get to know the person. I think that's it. I think, and that's what when you say, you know, this barrier, it's like, so many of us, and I'll speak to myself, is that because I'm so afraid I'll offend, I don't then want to be friends.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like, okay, so then I kind of shirk back, and that's such a loss because you, like, both of you are such great people. I'm so glad that we've become, you know, friends on this journey. And hearing this, it's like, oh, you know, how many people have said, you know, I don't want to offend, I'm too afraid to engage, and therefore have lost on friendship and connection.
One of the things I love about children, generally speaking, is they're not worried about offending, right? They're not inhibited in that way. But too often when I go to the grocery store or some other public venue, I will hear parents or caregivers shushing their children when their children say something like, why is she in a wheelchair? From my perspective, it's not a bad question. It's honest, it's curiosity. And if you shut that down, that could lead to awkwardness or worried about offending years down the road, such that building a natural relationship becomes less possible. So wherever possible, don't shush your kids. Maybe teach them to ask questions respectfully and coming from a good place.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. That's really, beautiful. Really good advice. And that's a good conversation for parents to have. Mm-hmm. To say, hey, you know what? There's all kinds of people in the world. And if you're curious, ask a question.
Mm-hmm. And just like you said, you might offend me. I'm sure there are offensive disabled people out there. And so if someone with a disability offends you, don't give up.
Okay. Right?
We need to be graceful on both sides.
Okay. Perspective. Okay. Oh, that's good, Chantel. Okay. And finally, the last one, created in God's image. This is the fourth key that we need to know about people with disabilities, created in God's image.
And so on the most basic level, this comes from Genesis 1:27, where God says, let us make humankind in our image. I'm speaking from a theology and disability developed perspective, the communal view of disability goes so far as to suggest that people with various abilities, whether you're able-bodied, whether you have an apparent disability or a non-apparent disability, God created you to reflect some portion of his image. And so together we reflect more of God's image, right? And so it goes so far as to suggest that perhaps disability wasn't a part of the fall, and is actually part of God's intended beautiful human diversity. And that is the view that I ascribe to.
That's powerful. Mm-hmm. All of us are image bearers of God.
And I need you to do what you can't do, and Jasmine to do I need you to do what I can't do, mm-hmm. and Jasmine to do what she can do so that I can do best what I can do.
Oh, that's powerful. That's powerful, Chantel. Thank you. That's amazing. Those are great four keys. Intersectionality, the language we use to talk about disability, the prevalence of disability in Canada. We missed that.
27% of Canadians, so over 8 million Canadians live with disability.
How many?
Over 8 million, 27%. Those are the stats from 2022.
Wow.
That's all different types of disabilities, so that includes mobility, flexibility, mental health, developmental disabilities, pain-related disabilities, kind of all of it. But that's Canadians age 15 and older, 27% of us.
That's a lot. I didn't know that number was that high.
So there are people with disabilities around you all the time. You just may not be able to see it because they might be non-apparent disabilities. Maybe they haven't disclosed. So no matter where we are, definitely viewers today, there are definitely viewers with disabilities watching, because we are everywhere.
And disability is the only minority to which anyone can join at any time due to illness, accident, or age even.
Wow. Okay, yeah, I'm learning
stats,
a lot here.
The stats go up as you get older.
The stats go up.
Yeah.
So right now you're saying
it's 27% overall, but like if you broke that up by age category, you would have the highest numbers in the older age categories.
Okay. Yeah.
And our population is continuously aging, right? And so the stats of disability are only going to go up in the future.
So this is so important. This is why it's so important. And timing, I mean, every day, year is good timing, but this is good timing too, just to know as the stats are getting bigger, these are the things that we need to know and understand. So again, intersectionality, the language we use, the prevalence of disability, and created in God's image. I love that. And now I want to transition into our journeys, your journeys. I want to hear about your journey, your diagnosis and living with it, the challenges, how what has happened to you has affected your body, yourself, your spirit, and identity, and what you're learning through your disability. And so, Jasmine, I'd love to hear your story, and then after Jasmine, Chantel. Mm-hmm. I think it will give myself and, you know, our viewers and listeners just a sense of, like, your life. And as we listen, what we can learn through your life and about you.
Thanks. And we're a good match because we have very different stories. Mm-hmm. And again, thinking of intersectionality, my story is only my story. But 10 years ago, I was diagnosed with a neuromuscular disease called myasthenia gravis. So I was 31. I had a small child, busy life. And I for 2 years, I couldn't work. I couldn't really socialize. I couldn't buy my own groceries. A lot of things I couldn't do. What my disease does, it means that the more I use a muscle, the weaker it gets. There's a problem between the communication between my nerves and my muscles. So if I overuse a muscle, it will get weaker and weaker to the point where it temporarily paralyzes. So for the first 2 years, it was a lot of trial and error of therapies. And I just kind of continuously got worse. And it was very scary. It was a really difficult time for me and my family. But after 2 years of, you know, surgery and infusions and medications and therapies, we found a mix that allowed me to manage it. So now it's managed. I was able to go back to work part-time. I'm able to do a lot of the things I used to do, maybe differently or less, but I kind of have my life back. So that was my diagnosis. And then I'm in a good place now, but those first 2 years were really, really hard. I kind of lost my sense of self. I lost my sense of self-worth. Mm. I felt very broken, almost unlovable. I felt like I was a burden because I needed help to shower. I needed help to wash my hair. Sometimes I couldn't get off the toilet by myself because my legs would stop working. Like, I just felt I couldn't take care of my child the way I used to. Like, I just really was struggling with my sense of self-worth because I was used to being independent and strong and competent and capable, and all of a sudden I wasn't in the same way. But something that really helped me was I had just gone back to work and I was talking to a coworker, and he asked if I would consider myself to have disabilities now. And I hadn't thought of the word disability related to myself at that point. I had only thought of myself as chronically ill, as sick, mm-hmm. or as broken. And when he said, would you consider yourself to have a disability? I was like, yes. And it was like immediate relief because I have worked with people with disabilities for years. I've had friends with disabilities. I've had disabled role models and mentors and adults in my life when I was a child that were caregivers and professionals, and they were capable and competent. And I never thought that they were broken or a burden in any way. And so when I could see myself as disabled, I was like, oh, I'm just disabled. There's nothing wrong with me. I'm just different than I used to be. And it was like really empowering. It also helped me to be able to advocate for myself, to ask for access, for accessibility things. Even today when we came in, I asked if we could switch chairs, which meant we had to move the mics, the cameras, all sorts of things. But that's because I know that's an access need for me, and so I'm more confident to ask for those things than I used to be. I'm still shy about
it. And I'm really proud of you for doing that, because you could have easily were like, no, I don't want to like upset anything, and so I'll just deal with it. So I want to just affirm you. I was really proud that you spoke up, and then our crew just was like, whoop, let's do it. But I just want to affirm that,
well,
and just say
thank you for being
well
confident.
Done for that, because
thank
sometimes
you.
People wouldn't do that. So,
but that's what being disabled does for me, is it gives me an identity that gives me a place of strength to then be able to advocate for what I might need and what other people with disabilities need. And I work with a group of advocates at Caris named Our Voices Matter, and they're all people that use Caris services, and I'm continually learning from them how to advocate, how to speak up for our rights, that it's important that everybody watches out for each other and advocates for each other to make it better. So that's what I would say I'm still learning.
Okay.
In terms of like my life currently, I use a wheelchair very, very rarely, but I use a walker or a cane almost all of the time. I have biweekly infusions and multiple medications and lots of it affects everything I do. My brother also has a chronic illness. He has this analogy that it's kind of like water. Most of us in North America can go and turn on a tap and get running water in our house at any time. We kind of take it for granted. Mm. And for most people not living with disability or chronic illness, that's their same approach to energy. You just have energy and you just access it when you need it. But for somebody like me who's living with chronic illness or a dynamic disability that changes, it's kind of like you have one jug of water at the beginning of the day, one jug of energy, and you have to ration it to make it last until the end of the day.
Wow.
So every movement that I make, from whether I, like what kind of pen I use to write with, whether I use a cane or walker or wheelchair, whether I walk up that flight of stairs or talk, all of that I have to calculate and ration my energy to make sure I can get to the end of the day without overdoing it in any one area and having that muscle start to shut down. So that for me is like the hardest thing, but it's ongoing learning, and I'm always like finding hacks and ways to get better at it.
That's good. So. I love like things like Our Voice Matters that you're a part of, and the journey and using your voice, feeling like, you know, you have agency and saying, I can use my voice to speak up for what I need. And I love that. And I'm grateful that you're here. Thanks for sharing that. Thank you.
It's good learning.
Yeah, it is a good learning. And like you
said, I'm not the person I was 9 years ago. I'm not the person that I will be in 9 years, but I'll keep learning and I'll keep.
Isn't that beautiful, though,
about
life and being a woman, that we're always growing, learning and evolving and creating, and it's so good. Okay, Chantel, your story. Love to hear your story.
So as Jasmine mentioned, our stories are a little bit different. My disability doesn't scare me because I've had 42 years to 41. I'm still 41.
okay.
I've had 41 years to adapt. I was born 2 months prematurely, and the birth narrative that I was told by my parents and family, who were very intent on imparting Christian faith to me, was that God had saved me for a purpose, and as it says in Jeremiah 29:11. And so I was very empowered from that perspective, and I started using a power wheelchair at the age of 2. I was a little bit of a terror. I scratched a Corvette when I was 4. And we got riding lawnmower insurance because 4-year-olds shouldn't drive motorized carts or vehicles. And thankfully, my mom was very intent on making sure that I knew that when I needed help, I had the right to ask, whether it be from a parent, a cousin, or a store clerk. When I entered the employment market around 19, 20, 21, I went through a phase that lasted quite a long time, about thinking that I had to compensate for my so-called weaknesses or my disability and make myself be more normal, whatever that means. I don't even really know. I would say about 3 or 4 years ago, probably when I started approaching 40, I got tired of masking, which is this term that people in the disability community sometimes use for things that you do to hide your disability or to overcompensate or to make yourself seem more normal. Mm. And it was in writing an article about ableism with Jasmine that we were talking about this concept of, and I just blurted out, like, I'm not going to pretend I can serve you in the way other people's will. Hmm. But I will serve you using my gifts if you'll let me. And
wow, that's good.
So with that, I've kind of started more to embrace the fact that God has given me specific challenges for which I need to partner with other people on a daily, sometimes hourly basis. But through those challenges, he's also given me strengths that other people don't have. And so, for example, because I've never been able to write anything down, my memory is better than most people's. Because I've never been able to read without a screen reader, I read the entirety of documents, and I sometimes pick up on details that other people might miss. Mm. And because I'm used to collaborating with diverse people and who have diverse gifts and strengths, then I'm pretty good at delegating and highlighting other people's strengths and abilities and encouraging and supporting them. And I really, really love that. But it's taken me considerable time to come to a place where I don't have to be normal in order to be valued.
Mm. That's good.
That's good. Are you just like doing that mic drop and just letting it sit there?
I don't have a mic.
Oh, yeah. Are you just doing a drop and just letting it sit there?
It seems That's like powerful. This is the opportunity to do that.
It is absolutely an opportunity. There's a lot that both of you said. It's a fascinating thing where there was that point for both of you, like, I felt broken. I felt I had to be this. But now as you're sitting here, it feels that you're fully, like, have embraced that this is who I am. I am disabled. I need people to do the things that I can't do. But I also have the things that you can't do. And it's just one of those, like, aha moments of, like, wow. Yeah.
When you say fully embraced, it scares me a little because I think each day there's an ebb and flow, right? Some days I embrace this more than others. And there are times or experiences in my life when I really wish that I was still more normal. Mm. But generally speaking, I'm on the upward trajectory to God has created me this way for a purpose, and he's not changing anything for a purpose.
Yeah.
And I still grieve who I was, but I also love who I am.
That's beautiful.
So it's not like, oh, it's all perfect. Yeah. It's still hard, but it's still a worthwhile life and a good life and a full life.
Good. I think it's the perfect time now to go to our prayer lines. And this is why, because I think some of the viewers and people who are listening are probably like, oh, there's a lot there. I feel the same way that you do. And so we have people who will listen and pray for those that are struggling. We're here. We want to help you. We want to help you. We want to be here for you. So here's how you can connect with someone who cares and is ready to listen.
My daughter's been diagnosed with a rare illness. Every night, I lie awake, worried and scared. Your prayers have brought us so much peace and strength. You were there for us when we needed it most.
We are here for you. We don't want you to be alone. So please give our prayer lines a call 24/7. Prayer is important, as you've heard today. So please give us a call. Okay, our final question of the show. What advice can you give me, someone, a church or workplace who wants to inspire a more inclusive environment? Chantel.
Melinda, I love the way that you opened the show because you said, I wish I did a show about disability before. And then you also said something really insightful was, because I would have loved to get to know you earlier. Mm-hmm. And I would say that there is something to be said for basic accessibility awareness, things that you can do to modify the environment. But accessibility is much more about developing relationships with individual people, because as you've seen, Jasmine and I have very diverse access needs as well as very diverse interests and personalities, and we're only two members of the disability community. Mm-hmm. And so you're not going to make your show, your church, your workplace fully accessible without developing relationships with individual people. The other thing that I want to note is that if someone with disabilities is bold enough to ask for prayer from you, mm-hmm. make sure that you pay attention to what it is they are seeking from God and you, because it may be a cure, but it may be something much more different than that. So don't just jump to cure, but consider what it is they really, really need from God in this moment. And maybe more so, pray that God would help them on their journey to self-acceptance mm-hmm. and show them his unique purpose for their lives.
Beautiful. Oh, I love that, self-acceptance. Thank you, Jasmine.
I second everything Chantel said. Start with relationships. Everything else will flow out of that. People often are hesitant to talk about accessibility because they think it's going to be expensive and time consuming, but it's often really small things. You know, very small for me. It's, you know, moving where we sat today. Yeah. That cost nothing and it didn't take time. So start with relationships. Everything else will flow from there.
Beautiful. Thank you. I have learned so much. Thank you, Jasmine and Chantel, for being with me. Thank you for joining us. And if you want any information about them or the show, seeherelove.com. And always know, you are seen, you are heard, and you are deeply loved by God. Bye-bye.
The Bible can feel overwhelming, confusing, or hard to believe. Scripture Untangled, a new podcast by the Canadian Bible Society, brings you interviews with culture leaders, leaders in ministry, and Bible thinkers to help you be inspired to dive into the Bible and understand it. Listen for free and subscribe to Scripture Untangled on your preferred podcast app. Visit scriptureuntangled.ca for more information.
Thank you for listening to See, Hear, Love, the podcast with Melinda Estabrooks. We are able to do See, Hear, Love because of these generous sponsors, Tyndale University. Melinda and I are both Tyndale alumni. Tyndale is where you will experience high-quality academics interwoven with faith and a community of students and faculty that challenges you to live authentically, to follow Christ, and actively engage your culture. Visit www.tyndale.ca. The Canadian Bible Society champions the Bible as the voice of God, revealing Jesus Christ, the living word. Go to www.biblesociety.ca. Please check out these amazing organizations who are doing life-transforming work and who we are proud to be partnered with.